Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use. Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler. You are here to listen to the wisdom of Victor Davis Hanson, the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor is so many things: best-selling author, syndicated columnist, farmer, military historian, classicist, and man with a website. It's called The Blade of Perseus. Its web address is victorhanson.com. I'll tell you more about that towards the end of this episode. We are recording on Friday, the 29th of March. It's Good Friday. And we have any number of things to discuss in this episode. I just want to say, Victor, we're going to be recording two episodes today. And this particular episode will be out on April 2nd. And on the second episode, we're going to talk a lot about Donald Trump in that one. But in this one, we're going to start off getting Victor's thoughts about Joe Biden, about an insane award given to the Associated Press for a photograph they took on October 7th. The fallout, Victor's thoughts on the fallout of the sacking of Ronna McDaniel from MSNBC. We have a bunch of California stories also to get Victor's thoughts on. We'll get to all of this, starting with Joe Lieberman's death, right after these important messages.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So Victor, Joe Lieberman, who was the senator from Connecticut, where I live, I knew Joe Lieberman a little bit. I served on a board with him at the Gatestone Institute, bumped into him a few times in the city. As you may recall, he had a relationship with William F. Buckley on National Review. Bill Buckley was central to his election to the Senate in 1988. But he fell. He had an accident. He moved out of Connecticut. He moved to Riverdale in the Bronx, and he fell the other day, and he died from complications of that fall. He was 82, the vice presidential candidate on the ticket with Al Gore in 2000, a man of some appreciation on the right, but a very eclectic man. Victor, what are your thoughts about the late Joe Lieberman?
I had a lot of admiration, just like you did. He ran with Al Gore, as you remember, in 2004. And then they kind of turned on him as he became a little bit more moderate. He was always a moderate, but I mean, he veered away from the direction the Democratic Party was going. And then in your state, I think he ran as an independent to capture his, to get reelected the first Senate seat.
He did.
And that made him really angry. And I think he was pretty prescient. He saw where this anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, I don't know what you say, base of the Democratic Party was going. And he was adamantly against it. And so I don't know where he was politically. He was probably what we would call a JFK Democrat when they don't exist anymore. So he was kind of out in the wilderness. I don't know what somebody like Joe Lieberman, he was an independent when he died the other day, what would he would do with a party that incorporates things that we've never even imagined before. Just this week, Jack, we had a Berkeley City Council meeting that was designed to commemorate the Holocaust. There was actually a Holocaust survivor there when these thugs broke in, or protesters. And I was watching the video, but what they were saying was pretty crazy. You Zionist pig. Like, it was horrible. And then when you collate that with this University of Missouri Journalism Award for the best photos of the year, and they gave one of the top awards to the photo of the young woman who was a German Israeli who was apparently killed at the concert, had her head bashed in. They took the body, as everybody saw from that video, and she was partially stripped, and they put her as a trophy, the corpse, in the back of that pickup, and then they drove around honking, had people spit on her, and I think there were three or four people in the pickup. That photo got the top award. So these are things that Joe Lieberman would never have imagined and didn't imagine and distance himself from. So his passing is a reminder of what the Democratic Party used to be like, but it bears no resemblance today.
He wrote a piece last week in the Wall Street Journal going after Chuck Schumer for Chuck Schumer's involvement in Israeli politics and his attack on Netanyahu. So he was... That really was, it wasn't so much that, by the way, Victor. Now that I think about it, you know, he was elected in 1988. He unseated Lowell Weicker, who was just a reprehensible Republican. And he lost the primary after in 2006, the Senate primary, because of his stand on in Iraq, the Iraq war. And he lost to Ned Lamont, who is now the governor of Connecticut, but he then won the general election as an independent. And 2 years later, he endorsed John McCain. I think he may have even spoken at the Republican convention.
No, he did. He did. I remember that. But what would he have made of this Shauna Luke, poor woman who was killed and defiled? And, had her head bashed in, and she was being shown off as a trophy, and people were celebrating her partially nude corpse. And the photograph of that, and the photographer win this award from an American university, which apparently I hadn't heard of it, but it's a renowned Picture of the Year award, at least one of the Pictures of the Year awards. So it's just mind-boggling where we are. And when you look at those protests where they broke into the innately obscene Biden, Clinton, Obama raising all this cash in New York, really a reminder who the moneyed interests are in this country and who they're for. But the point I'm making is this is getting really out of hand. And when you go into try to disrupt something that doesn't have anything to do with Gaza and Berkeley, it's about the Holocaust.
Right.
And the same thing is going on at Stanford University. There's an article in The Atlantic by a Stanford student just how dangerous it is. I mean, it's dangerous. This is like the 1930s, and nobody in the Democratic Party, the only time it ever came up as far as anti-Semitism, remember Corinne Jean-Pierre said, well, we're looking into that, but, and then she just went off on Islamophobia, which is not supported by any FBI statistic. It's not nearly the problem, if it is a problem, statistically compared to anti-Semitism violence. So I don't, you know, it's, he was impossible for someone like Joel Lieberman to be a part of the Democratic Party. And if you are a old Jewish liberal, I don't mean old by age, but if you've been a Jewish liberal, Jewish American liberal for a long time, you have a choice. You can do what Joel Lieberman did and leave the party, or you can do what Chuck Schumer did and double down and try to prove to everybody that you don't have any particular empathy with Israel, at least as Israel as you think it's governed by the Netanyahu government. Something's happened to him anyway, though. Something's happened to Chuck Schumer. I don't remember him as crazy, but in 2020, he went out in front of the Supreme Court doors and said, you know, I keep mentioning that. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, you sowed the wind, you're going to reap the world when you won't know what hit you. And then this speech about Israel, he's something is wrong with that guy. He's just out on a limb. He's just.
Yeah, a story just came out about him today, Victor. He was someone uncovered a speech he gave in 2009. This has to do with immigration.
I remember that speech. I remember that speech. It was fire and brimstone about the need for closed borders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember Hillary Clinton's, I said before, I remember her 1992 Bill and Hillary speeches. I remember Nancy Pelosi's speech at the, also at the conventions. And I remember that because in 1992, I was on the Stanford campus at the Center for Behavioral Studies, and I remember that. And I was starting to think about writing about immigration, and I thought, it's not really controversial, or it's not of any interest, because the Democrats and the Republicans are on the same page. Or maybe the Democrats were for a stronger border because of their union constituencies, and there were people in the Republican Party that were laissez-faire,
right?
Let the market adjudicate. I had one of the most famous economists in the world. I won't mention his name because I don't want to characterize something he might disagree with after he's passed away, but one of the first debates I had with him was a donor had us debate at a restaurant. And I was saying that this is going to be a disaster if you have an open border, because we're not assimilating, integrating that many people. They're coming without skills. They're not having audit background checks. And once you come illegally and you reside illegally, you get ID. And he just dismissed it. He said, we're going to let the market adjudicate. I'll never forget it. He said, when wages on the southern side of the border and the northern side of the border are the same, we won't have a problem. And they'll get there if we just let enough people in. And I said, well, why don't we do that all over the world? We can do it all over the world. We can get rid of all borders. But I said, when this adjudication or this changing or this transmogrification of wages takes place, million people do you think it will take? 10, 20, 30, 40? Why not all of Mexico? And he couldn't say anything. He lived in a very nice place, so, and I reminded of him that. He got very angry when I said that. I also did a debate on one of the first NRO cruises. You remember when he was a wonderful person, Bartlett, the Wall Street Journal editor?
No.
What was his name?
Yeah, I think it was it wasn't an NR cruise.
What cruise was it? He was one of the speakers, and it was when he was dying, I think, of prostate cancer.
Yeah,
really, Robert Bartlett, is that his name?
Robert Bartlett, but it would have been a different. Yeah, yeah. The venue's unimportant. You debated him. Yeah.
Yeah, very politely about illegal immigration. I had just written Mexifornia, and he didn't like it at all. And said that it was exclusionary and that the United States needed the labor, and 99.9% of the people who came across the border illegally would be wonderful Americans. And I said, how do you know that if you don't audit? And why did we ever ask for anybody to have a vaccination in the old days? Or why did people who come legally, as I said to him, why do people have to fill out forms that are applying legally? If people are coming illegally and you have no problem with it, why not just get rid of the whole process? I think he warmed to that idea. Afterwards, he was very polite and he came up, you know, no hard feelings, but we were just on a panel back and forth.
Yeah. That Venezuelan guy we talked about last.
Cabrera, is that him that killed Lake and Riley?
No, the TikTok.
The influencer.
The influencer. Yeah, he was, I saw some other pieces about him talking about immigration. He's just waving cash around like, you're idiots. I'm here and I am getting money from this or that scam or this government program. And you clowns are working, you know, this, you're sweating for nothing. And I'm sitting on my ass and collecting cash. So that's the reality of border.
I think ICE put a hold on him though. They're looking for him.
Yeah.
They can't find him, but they only did that because he added insult to injury. And it's the same thing with Obrador. I talked about that a little bit with Sammy, that 60 Minutes interview where he basically said, $20 billion cost. You got to recognize more friendly Venezuelan Cuban communist government. You've got to get amnesty to Mexican citizens or else. And I think they asked him, or what? And they thought, well, he wouldn't say, but he did. He said, or it's going to continue, which de facto was an admission that he has the ability to stop it.
Right.
Because when he says it'll continue, it means if he doesn't get what he wants, he'll allow it to continue with a qualifier that if he does get what he wants, it won't continue. So he has the ability, whether he gets $20 billion or not from us, to stop it. And he won't stop it because he finds it interesting. I have a theory, though. I have a feeling that once he made those demands, just as Biden in 2022, on the eve of the midterms, drained the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and started canceling student debt, he's going to do that again. In fact, he's already started with the cancellation of student debt, but he will start draining the reserve and he will cancel debt and he'll make some deal with Obrador to stop illegal immigration around June. Give him money or something, and then he'll tell everybody that, well, this month, look at, it's down, it's way down 500%. I couldn't believe Corinne Jean-Pierre the other day was just shameless when she was talking about that the crime rate has gone way down under Joe Biden. It's much better now. This was in response to the killing of the police officer.
Yeah,
it's down in the sense that it spiked to all-time highs nearly, and now it can't get any higher without civilizational collapse. So obviously something that goes astronomically high will level out, but even property, car theft, all of that, except for murder and violent assault, has gone way up, and it's at a level that's not sustainable. But you can see the contours of what's going to happen in this election. They're going to blame all of their failures on Donald Trump. Afghanistan, it was his idea, not ours, to get out quickly. High crime. Well, he did it. Look, he did it. And then they're going to say, energy, we lowered the price of energy, you know, temporarily. So anything, their attitudes is, after screwing things up for three and a half years, any little slight return to normality is going to be considered normality or an improvement, not upon the disaster that they...
Yeah, the new normal.
Right? Yes, that's the new baseline. The new baseline is their historical high. And then if they deviate downward a little bit, then unlike Donald Trump, they've made all the bad things go away. I don't think anybody's going to believe that.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting thing the Trump campaign or Trump PAC's coming out with. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, Victor, you know, this particular episode is now in the month of April, April 2nd. We're out on, and April means what? Taxes. So appropriate time to talk about Tax Network. If you owe back taxes, listeners, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters, millions, then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. You'll pay up plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor, like a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. Tax Network USA has a special limited-time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited-time IRS penalty-canceling offer. Call 1-800-245-6000. Again, that's 1-800-245-6000 or visit TNUSA.com/Victor. And we thank Tax Network USA for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, picking up on where we left off, I want to just read quick headline here from, this is from the Daily Mail. The Trump PAC has revealed a new app, and I think it's going to be a powerful political tool. Just here's the headline, Victor, any thoughts you have? How much more are your groceries under Joe? Try Trump Super PAC's Biden Mart, but Biden-Mart.com to see how your shopping bill has changed in 4 years. I checked out the article. I mean, this is right. It's bread and butter. What's on everyone's table? You just go there, and under Trump, I paid.
That's a good idea.
17 things, and it cost $23, and under Biden, it cost me $37. I think that on average, the average increase will obviously change depending on what you buy, but it's like, 65-70%. Everybody knows that. Everybody goes shopping, buys anything. Like, you buy even a freaking cup of coffee. How's this thing's $5 already? Mama mia.
Everything. I hear it every time I go to the supermarket twice a week. It's all people talk about, how expensive it is. And I look at poor people and I start seeing, I know a lot of them have electric banking transfer cards, but when you look at some of the the checkout totals, I used to think $150 was outrageous. I see $400 people, $400 for a real big shopping cart, here in California, at least.
Yeah.
Gasoline, with these trucks with 25, 30 gallon tanks, and it's over $5. You see these poor people with $150 to fill up. And then when you get in line for these cut rate, mass volume stations, every once in a while you see one. Out here, they're AM, PM, when you see them, nobody has a credit card. They go in and pay cash because they don't have the money to fill up.
Yeah. Well, it's also cheaper too. Well, cash versus credit, but still, I haven't filled up a tank out there, but I assume it could approach $100, right? Or more. You fill up your truck. Does it top $100?
Oh.
Sorry.
I have a 32 gallon tank.
Well, he approaches $200.
So I just filled up in Palo Alto, unfortunately. Usually I can go, if I can get 20 miles a gallon on a 5.8 Hemi Ram V8, I'm doing pretty well. But when I go, sometimes if I forget to fill up here, which is about 20 cents to 30 cents a gallon cheaper than on the coast, but $6 with. I had 30 gallons, so it was $180.
Dang.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's the gift of Joe Biden printing $6 trillion psychologically, at least, telling people that the era of the internal combustion engine was over, the federal leasing was going to be cut back, no more Keystone ideas, ANWR's off the table. Which is really interesting because, as I said last time, he doesn't want to tell anybody. But one of the things that he's most sensitive about is food and gas. So actually, when you look at the cubic feet of natural gas or oil that it's being produced, we're at Trump levels, at his zenith. And we're even getting higher, which tells you that when they made fun of Trump, when he said, I can get up to 50, I don't know what the number is, 15, 16 million barrels a day or whatever it was, they laughed at him. But you can see that that's after you put ANWR off limits. You're not taking any North American oil from Canada, or you've cut back on offshore. We could do a lot more for at least for 10 years. Right. So, but it's really funny about Biden, because that's what's so strange about this non-transparent, disingenuous administration. They damn oil. They damn oil. They told us when he was running that the Saudis were a pariah nation. He was not going to deal with them. And then as soon as that midterm came up, he courted the Saudis. He courted the Venezuelans. He courted even the Iranians with the Iranian deal. And it was pump oil. Courted Putin. Well, not quite right at the election, but he had in 2021. You guys pump oil. You pump oil. You got to get the price down. I'll drain the reserve. We got to get it down. And so it was so cynical.
Yeah. Well, Victor, speaking of cynical, the hiring and firing of Ronna McDaniel, and we'll get your thoughts on this right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, we discussed last week the initial outrage by Chuck Todd and others concerning the hiring Ronna McDaniel, the former head of the RNC, by MSNBC. But between when we spoke and today, she got canned, defenestrated, however you want to put it. The network executives caving to the outrage machine of their editorial staff. From
I didn't understand. Why the reason they said was because she was the head of the RNC, but
so was Michael Steele.
Michael Steele's the head of the RNC, and George Stephanopoulos is over at ABC, and he was at Clinton Flack, and at MSNBC they have Al Sharpton at MSNBC. Right. He was the most anti-Semitic, racist political you can imagine. They have Joy Reid. Remember that thing where she just said for years that somebody hacked her email and therefore she was not homophobic, but she went after that Governor Christie who was running for Senate in Florida, remember? Is his name Christie? I forgot his name.
Oh, my gosh. I forget. Yeah. Christ,
I'm sorry. I added a Y to it.
Yeah.
Governor Christ, Charlie Christ. Yeah. And he... Boy, she wrote some horrible things. And that reappeared. And then she said that the FBI was looking out because she was hacked. It's a complete fabrication. She lied, and she right on the air with a straight face, and she's never apologized. She's there. Sharpton's there. And, you know, they've got John Brennan. John Brennan has admitted that he's lied twice under oath. He was one of the people, along with Mike Morrell and Anthony Blinken and James Clapper, that cooked up the whole 51 quote-unquote intelligence authorities to lie to the American people on the eve of the second debate that Hunter's laptop was not Hunter's laptop, that all those naked selfies and Mr. 10% and the big guy all came out of the brain of some Russian guy in the Kremlin. That's what they told us, basically. So They have no standards at all. I don't, you know, and that I made a tweet. I don't know why she'd want to do that. Is it the exposure? Is it she wants the $300,000 for being a paid analyst? Is it because she wants to follow the trajectory of Nicole Wallace, Joe Scarborough, Michael Steele, where you go, you're really kind of supposedly a brand name, signature conservative. You go over to MSNBC or CNN, and then you quietly drift, 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 and presto, at some point, you're where the bulwark is, you know what I mean? A Charles Sykes or William Kristol, and that's where, in media, there's a lot more financial rewards.
Right.
Is that her trajectory? I don't know. But she's got, if Fox can be defamed because people on the air, and there were three or four people who did, said that the Dominion computers could not be trusted and they were communicating, that was a false allegation, with foreign interest, then it seems to me that she's got a good case for defamation when they called her a serial liar and she made up this and this and this.
Yeah.
And she really damaged her character. So we'll see what happens. But it just shows you that these people are paranoid. They can have no dissent. They can't have any unorthodox person on there. And as we go into this election cycle, they are getting really weird. They are terrified that Donald Trump is going to win, that Fannie Willis, Alvin Bragg, Letitia James, E. Jean Carroll, Jack Smith, getting them off the ballot, all that's not working to the way that they thought it would. And they're left with the issues, and they do not want to talk about the issues. So it's going to be big, big money, big, big money. Donald Trump wants to have back alley abortions. Donald Trump tried to overthrow the government. And Donald Trump is a Putin stooge, and that's about it. It's all you're going to see.
Yeah. I think they can also stomach their own culpability to a degree if you go back to 2015. And Donald Trump ruled the MSNBC airwaves. He just did, to the exclusion of anyone else. You know, where's
CNN?
Marco Rubio? Nowhere to be found on MSNBC.
It's funny you said that, man. I think his opponents calibrated it was $1 billion in free publicity if they had to pay for that type of exposure by the minute. The worst was I used to watch once in a while Joe Scarborough when he wasn't completely unhinged. And I could not believe it in 2015, 2016. He was a unapologetic Trump partisan. He had Trump on there every day in 2016. And he was, remember he would throw up these softball questions and then they would kind of have crosstalk about how they knew each other socially and all that. It was just embarrassing. And I don't know whether he thought that he wanted to promote Trump so Trump would be a weaker candidate versus Hillary, or his transformation was not complete into a leftist then at that point. He really was for Trump, or I don't know what it was, but it was really weird. And he got a lot of static for that, too, from Republican candidates for being so biased.
Well, you know, Joe's my friend. Once you're my friend, you're always my friend, and I'll let you have the floor on all those things. So I think you're pretty damn dead on your observations there, Victor. Hey, we're going to talk a lot more about Donald Trump on our next episode. But right now, Victor, I have one word, and it's barbecue. Just hearing that word makes your mouth water. You may already, dear listener, have a low-temperature, slow-cooking smoker, egg, or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of your busy week, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast, Solair infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes. Even on cold winter nights, that heat locks in juices and flavor and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better-than-restaurant-quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled veggies. Solair is a multi-generational, veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial-grade stainless steel, so they are built to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill, at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solaire infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. And we do thank the good people from Solaire Infrared Gas Grills for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, you're out in California right now, and there's a lot of stuff going on out there that I think we need to get your thoughts on. One is, well, we talked a lot about him in the past, but SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, got sentenced.
My former semi-neighbor.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that before we pick up some other things?
Yeah. But Sam Bankman-Fried, I was disappointed that he only got 25 years. Bernie Madoff got over 100. And his scam outdid Bernie Madoff's in terms of total losses. It was really weird about his parents, too. I mean, they petitioned the court with letters and how what he was, this effective altruism and all this stuff that they put. Nobody talked about the thousands of people who lost everything that when this thing collapsed. And he did it knowingly. He was a pathological personality. He really hurt a lot of people. He was like Elizabeth Holmes at Theranos, and only much worse. And I guess he thought that because the Democratic Party takes care of their own, that he was going to use other people's money and out contribute George Soros, and then he would have been the darling of the Democratic Party and have a lifetime exemption from any criminal exposure. It almost worked. But I thought he got off lightly, even though he's going to be 50-something when he gets out, but they won't keep him in the whole 25 years.
Well, Victor, close to Palo Alto is Oakland, and here's a headline. I'm just curious, when is Oakland going to become Detroit? This is from the Daily Mail. Outrage as Oakland officials go after 102-year-old wheelchair-bound man after he was unable to remove graffiti painted all over his home, as a Dem-run city threatens to fine him thousands. Are you kidding me? No. This is Oakland.
That works on so many different ways. Remember the Bloomberg? I wrote an article once called The Bloomberg Effect. And when he was talking about the need for to ban supersized drinks when he couldn't get the snow out. And the left has this, and the administrative mind in general has this idea that if you cannot deal with the existential, then there's really nothing that we need you for. So you inflate or you focus or you exaggerate the inconsequential. So translated to Oakland, that means they have no idea how to deal with all of these chains and fast food and Starbucks leaving that city because people are being carjacked, murdered, attacked, looting, and the district attorney and the chief of police and the mayor either cannot or will not deal with it. So everybody knows that, and they are losing high-end donors. If you look at Oakland, go up on the hill above it, Piedmont and all those people, they have their own security patrols. And even them are not going to stick around because that crime is incrementally going up the hill. And to the people who live in Cirrus, so to speak, if I use an old Star Trek term. But yeah, and so what do? They go after a 102-year-old man because he didn't erase the graffiti, and they're going to charge him $1,100 and another $1,000, and they're going to make him pay for it, and then they're going to virtue signal. See, we're dealing with graffiti, even though there's, as a lot of the news accounts pointed out, there's public facilities, telephone juncture boxes, electricity, that are covered with, that they're responsible for, and they won't. They can't, they won't clean them up. It's just typical. It's just like San Francisco. They've got home. The last time I was there was not too many months ago. You can walk by a store, and to the degree there's some people still in the downstairs or the bottom floors, 30 or 40% of them are empty. There's urine and there's feces. And when I went to a hotel restaurant, they right in front of me, they were using a pressure washer to clean the sidewalk. And I backed out because I could see things flick out into the gutter. But my point is, they're now preventing these storefronts from putting window boxes or planters or anything to keep the homeless people from camping out in their entrances. And I guess the excuse they're using is that the disabled will have more difficulty. I don't know. If I was a disabled person and I had a choice between going through an entrance where somebody was alive and animate, sleeping there, urinating there, fornicating there, injecting there, defecating there, and could hurt me, I would rather have nobody there and navigate around a planter box. It's not going to jump out, get in my face and attack me. What's the purpose of it? The purpose is to tell people, I'm London Breed, I'm the mayor, we're dealing with infractions of the code, we're trying to make sure that we don't have impediments on the street, we're down to the nitty-gritty now because we can't deal with the homeless problem. Yeah. We know what we have to do. We have the money to do it. We're not going to do it because we would rather have it fester than be called illiberal. And we're just not going to do it. And just get used to it. And, they don't really give you the figures about how many people, as a result of all this, are leaving California. They say 285,000 in 18 months. But you start looking at some of them, it could be as high as 250,000, 300,000 a year are leaving. And these are not people who are part of the 50% who pay no income taxes to California. This is the 1% that right. pays 50. This is the 5% that pay 80% of the taxes. These are the people that have homes that pay high property tax because of the assessments. And when you start losing those, when you at a time you have a $76 billion deficit, after you got all that federal funding during the COVID years from the Trump administration, and you had, you had $100 million, $100 billion surplus, and you go through it. It's just phenomenal. And a lot of the story is, the subtext is that people don't want to talk about it. There's two things that are going on in California besides the crime rate, besides the high-speed rail fiasco, besides the infrastructure fiasco, besides California. One of them is this flight of capital and taxpayers. But the other is, we have the largest black market of any state in the union. I can go today, Jack, you just name the item, and I can go buy it at a corner. If I want to go get any type of food, I can get it five miles from my home right now without paying any tax on anything, restaurant, nothing. And I know that the owners are not paying anything. They're just pulling up on the side of the street and open in a mobile canteen. If I want a shovel, I can go to the weekly swap, no sales tax, no income tax they pay. If I need a plumber, if I need an electrician, a roofer, a window installer, you name it. I might not be able to call up a licensed contractor and get him out here. But if I do call him up and I said, I have an emergency, they will give me an employee and says, well, we'll get a guy on the weekend. Or people, and they'll come out and they'll say, yep, I'll do it for $50, $60, $70 an hour. In cash. They all want in cash. When you go into the bank and I had a person, I won't mention his name or occupation, he wouldn't work unless I paid him in cash. So I went in the bank apologetic to get a small amount of cash. And they said, well, this is nothing, Victor. Don't feel bad. You should see the amounts that we have to give out to some of our employers. No, it's all a black market and no one talks about it. They won't go after it, partly because a lot of them are recent immigrants. 27% of the state of California were not born in the United States. And so they do not want to get a reputation. They're going after that type of community. But they are driving. They have no qualms. They don't worry at all, Jack, that they're driving out the taxpayer. They don't seem to be worried at all. And I don't know.
Can I get back, if you don't mind, just quickly to Oakland? I'm just curious, you know, from total East Coast perspective, I've always considered Oakland, I don't know, stepchild of San Francisco in a way. I'm not denigrating it. But it's just a perception. And what was Oakland? You know, you 40 years ago, Victor. Would you go to Oakland? Was it a place of a nice downtown, restaurants, etc.? Was it always kind of a gritty town?
It depends when you say you're talking 40 years ago.
Well, give us your perception of what Oakland is.
Well, that would be in the mid 80s. No, it was bad. It was like it is now. And
all right,
I can remember going on the freeway and having to pull over to get gas. And it was really bad. I got lost and was driving through a neighborhood near downtown Oakland. And it was bad. And when I was a college student, in the 70s, I went to a restaurant there. It was bad. As I remember, there's a Fox station there, and there's not one in San Francisco studio. And a long time ago, I went there, and it's bad. However, the weird thing was in the 80s, I think it was 1999, Jerry Brown chose Oakland to return to politics. And he schmoozed with all of the big businesses and the labor unions and the black community, the Latino community, you name it. And for about 10 years, they had, and that had started, to be fair, before him, but they had urban renewal, Lake Merritt, they had a crew program. There were, you know, Mills College was there. They had all sorts of things going on. Piedmont, the prices just skyrocketed to be. And it's one of the most, the hills above Oakland that go all the way to the Berkeley Hills are some of the most beautiful places in the world. And so it was in a renaissance. And that's how Jerry Brown leveraged that back into politics, that he said to everybody, I took a city that was in dire, I deliberately did it. I didn't go right into San Francisco. I didn't go into Los Angeles, San Diego. I wanted to go to Oakland. And he stayed downtown. He did the whole thing he did in the 70s as governor. And I give him credit. It was I don't want to say quite a renaissance, but Alameda County, Oakland, the Oakland airport got prominent as a cheaper or more convenient place to fly out of in certain ways. Yeah. I remember I was asked to speak on that corridor between, I think it was 580 and the high 13, Piedmont. It was really beautiful. I was very safe. I walked around, and it was on the way to being recovered, and now it's gone in reverse. And the same thing is true of Berkeley next door, and reversed. In 1971, my parents had an old friend that died in his 80s, and his widow called up and asked if we could help her move to an apartment. So we drove up. I drove up an old 65 Chevy pickup my grandfather had, and I met my parents coming up, and we loaded everything on. I drove over to the rest home or the assisted living. We put it in storage, and I parked my pickup. I went with my parents I parked at the storage section. I went to the nearby assisted living to meet. They picked me up. I went over to help them unload her personal belongings. I came back, and the pickup was stolen. And that was okay. It was broad daylight. Yeah. And I think it was 9 hours later, they found it abandoned down in Hayward somewhere. And it was trash with all sorts of paraphernalia in it, and it was torn up, but it was run, and I drove it home. It was, for some reason, it was leaking oil, and I remember my dad bought me two gallons of oil, and I stopped all the way for the next 210 miles putting oil in it. And I don't know what they did, but they did something to it. Tried to yank out the engine or pull something out. But it had a renaissance, and all they'd have to do is enforce the law, arrest people. If they're guilty, convict them. If they're convicted, incarcerate them. If they're incarcerated, don't let them out. And don't worry about whether you're inordinately incarcerating this group or that group. If they're guilty, just have blind justice and apply it. And it wouldn't take very long for people to return to normal. But it is, we have these enclaves that in the post-George Floyd defund the police.
Right.
They haven't got back to normal yet. They still, everybody thinks, well, BLM collapsed, the Troika, female Troika that founded it were crooked. They got their nice homes. They took the money and it's over with. The corporations are not stupid enough to subsidize that graft. And, you know, George Floyd, we've learned more about the whole circumstances around it. And it's a little bit more complex and everybody's sad. And we found out that the defund the police was disastrous. And now we're coming back to normal. Professor Kendi is not the hot item he was. Not Oakland. No. Not Washington, D.C. either. The residue of all of that craziness is still there. That 2020, 120 days of protest riots.
Yeah, I don't know how they get saved other than by strong local leadership, but that's a long odds bet. Yeah.
I went there in July and I pulled over to use the restroom and to get gas. And the sign said, it wasn't more than two blocks from the freeway, we are not responsible for your vehicle.
Right.
Me and I walked in and asked if I can use the restroom. She said, no. I said, I thought it was a law you have one. She goes, I'm sorry, we do not let people use the restroom. People lock themselves in there and they do things. And then we can't use it after they do things. So I said, okay. But I said, why do you have a sign? And she said, well, because we're not responsible if somebody carjacks your car as you're filling up. And I guess that meant that they were doing it. So it wasn't safe. And San Francisco's not safe. And increasingly places that were safe in the Bay Area are not safe. And they won't be safe again to the people who voted these politicians in, suffer the consequences of their own ideology.
Yeah.
And say to themselves, look in the mirror and said, I voted for a critical legal theory, relativist paradigm, and it's made my life miserable and I regret what I did and I'm not going to vote for it anymore. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah. Well, along the same lines of voting for things and not getting it, water, we've got some thoughts for you to share about what is happening right now in the Golden State, which has been soaked with water, and yet it seems
raining yesterday. Yeah.
But we'll get to that, Victor. Final thing we'll talk about. Maybe not. Maybe we'll add a little thing also on the caboose. We'll do that right after this final important message.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, the reservoirs are full, right? The reservoirs that should have been built are not full because they don't exist, even though the money was bonded for it. And yet, the farmers in the Central Valley, which feeds the world, are going to be denied water. Not totally denied, but certainly harmed. Tell us what's going on there, Victor.
Well, the Central Valley is 5 million acres, and I live on the eastern side. So we have what we call local irrigation districts. And that means the rivers that come out of the immediate Sierra Nevada, the Kern River, the Cahuilla River, the Kings River, the San Joaquin River, they have all been dammed years ago. And those reservoirs supply people within a 30-mile radius. And so we're lucky we get Kings River water in Consolidated Irrigation District. And that means also when you're using surface water, it recharges the water table, which has dropped about 40 feet because of recent drought. But remember, the more that Gavin Newsom says we're in a permanent drought, the more we remember that we're cyclical. The problem is that it's not climate change. The problem is we have 41 million people, and the water infrastructure and the transfer structure is designed for about 18 million people. And add to that an ideology that says you're in a permanent drought, and no matter what happens, you're not going to get more water or snowmelt because it doesn't exist. So then when it exists, like last year record, I think my gable on my mountain place collapsed under 25 feet of snow. And March was wetter than almost any month in history. So this year they said the same thing. Well, look at January and look at December. And we just waited. And sure enough, end of January, most of February, rain, snow. And then it was March and people said, well, it was just an average year with droughts. No, it's been snowing and raining and we're up to about 120% of normal in most places. So what does that mean? That means that for those acreages that are not near the Sierra, which is about 70% of the San Joaquin Valley, roughly from Highway 41 eastward all the way to I-5, or the 99 eastward maybe, the water table goes 200, 400, 800, 1,000 feet, even deeper. And they depend on a very different type of transfer, the majority of that is out of Folsom or Lake Shasta or Oroville, and that's through the California Water Aqueduct. Well, those are full now, Jack. So all that water should be transferring south through the Delta, goes into the Delta, then it would be pumped into the aqueduct, right? It's not. The rivers that are Sacramento, American River tributaries are going into the Delta, but they're not at the same volume being pumped. Why? Because they don't want agriculture on the western side of the San Joaquin Valley. It's the richest soil in the world. It's the most productive in the world. It's a place where you get 3 tons of almonds per acre or 3 bales of cotton an acre. It's just amazing when you have water, but it has no groundwater, so it's entirely dependent on these Northern California 300-mile transfers along through the aqueduct, and they do not want to do it. They believe that there's too much corporate agriculture, there's too much unnecessary farming, that we don't need pistachios, we don't need almonds, we don't need raisins, we don't need canned tomatoes, we don't need cotton, we don't need any of that. That's what we go to Whole Earth and we don't buy those sometimes. And we don't need meat. We don't need, alfalfa fields, any of that, fodder. And so what do they believe in? They want a riparian paradise. They want the rivers to flow from the northern mountain ranges and the Sierra at 100% of capacity. And that means they want to give first choice of the reservoir storage to the river. So it goes out to the Pacific. And they want, especially when these northern tributary rivers that have been under legal contract to different water districts to the south, were on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley, they don't want to honor those contracts. So the San Luis Reservoir doesn't really, it's full. It has over 3 million acre feet. I just drove by. It's almost full. But that's not going to go to what it was intended for when it was built in 62. It's going to go to the greater Silicon Valley, to San Jose, or the aqueduct as it goes south. It'll go over to the Central Coast, San Luis Obispo, or they'll have to Santa Barbara before it gets to, to L.A., but it will be for municipal consumption. So they're cutting off all of the farming, even though they've got a record water year. And if somebody can say, well, Victor, they have 41 million people. They have to. Yes, they could still do it, though, if they didn't let it go out to the Delta. Where it comes into the Delta, it just needs to be transferred into the aqueduct at 100%. But they have certain, the Delta smell, it's a canary in the mine, the water quality, the American River, we can restore it. We can have salmon going up the San Joaquin River like we were once read about in 1870, that kind of stuff. It's very ironic, Jack, because a lot of these permanent streams flows in these rivers are dependent on the reservoirs that they think are artificial, but ensure year-round water releases. Because in the old days, that when the snow melted, it would just flooded everything where we live. Reedley to Fresno was underwater, and then that was it. There was nothing in the late summer, so no fish could make it up anyway. So they're using the dams for a purpose that was not intended. It's not recreation. It's not the four purposes they built these 50 or 60 major dams. It was for recreation, for irrigation, water storage. It was for flood protection, and it was for hydroelectric generation. And now we just blew up four of them. They said, these are Native American lands. If we blow up the four dams on the Klamath River, it'll flow back to its 19th century reputed velocity. We'll get salmon buck. Indigenous people will go back to their indigenous fishing way. This is what we're going to do. So we blew them up. And guess what? We had mudslides. The rivers were fouled. We had mass die-offs of fish. We had game animals, deer and stuff, that were trapped in this sinkholes. It was a disaster. And that we don't build dams, we blow them up in California, this generation. We don't build railroads like we used to. We waste $20 billion on high-speed rail, Stonehenge. That's what we do. This generation is really culpable. It took a state, I'm going on a rant, but it took a state that had a moderate tax, and this was, I'm not being partisan, this was under Pat Brown, Jerry's dad, right. Ronald Reagan, Goodwin Knight, all of these people. They were Republican and Democrat. They had the premier educational system in the world, tripart, over 100 community colleges. They had 23 state colleges, state universities. They had, 9 UC campuses. They were building a UC campus every 4 or 5 years. LAX was a model of, so was SFO, of what an airport should be in the early 60s. Clover leaves were invented here. We had nuclear plants, Diablo Canyon. Up in Sacramento, we had one. We had down one on the coast on the way to San Diego. We had all of it. We had everything. We had a surplus of gas and oil. And we had a professional work, non-union state workforce. We had strict laws, Reagan, Doug Majan, Pete Wilson. It was a wonderful state. And this generation destroyed it. They destroyed it. It's in debt. It's got the highest taxes in the country. It's got the fourth or fifth highest sales taxes, highest income taxes. It's got the highest gasoline taxes. It's got one third of all the welfare recipients in the nation. It's got about 45% of the homeless people. 21% of the state lives under the poverty line. It's got the largest exodus of population of any state. I could go on. It's got, I think its infrastructure is rated something like 46. The 99 next to me, the north-south main lateral, the center of the state is, I think it's rated the most dangerous per 100,000 miles driven, highest fatality rate of any major highway in the United States. The schools are ranked, they used to be like on the top 10, they're ranked about 45, 46 on the basis of their test scores. Everything is going down. And when you look at the things that were going up, that used to be our pride, we have USC, we have Stanford, we have Berkeley, those universities are in disarray. We saw that with the anti-Semitic epidemic. They've gone into racial spoil system. They have repertory admissions, despite the Supreme Court. They're in a mess. And I don't see any bright spots in California, except it's so naturally beautiful. There's a lot of rot in a nation. You know, it takes a while to get down to pre-civilizational levels, given how wealthy and the state is naturally and the bountiful inheritance that our parents gave us.
Victor, you know what you didn't say in all this rant?
What?
You didn't say, what the F is wrong with this place? Which is a lead-in, Victor. So yes. You may comment on the use of...
Well, I had a minister from Ohio write me. I read all the letters from our readers. And he said he was getting tired of, I guess, my limited vocabulary. And he said that I fairly regularly use the F word. And we know what that is. I think I said I was angry about something. And one time, and I don't know, we're doing 16 a month. Yeah. So we're doing about 300 or 400 a year. And I don't think I think on one time I slipped and said that, and I backtracked immediately and said, I shouldn't say that. But the idea that I use the F word.
I effed up. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got really angry. So I'm going to write an angry letter on the website about it. But I really didn't like this minister and his self-righteous aspect. You know, it shows your limited vocabulary. It shows you have no respect for your readers. It shows you that just went in harangue.
Yeah. And
I don't mind harangues if I'm wrong, and I am wrong at times, and I try to acknowledge that. But the idea that I say F the whole word all the time, are fairly regular, is a complete fabrication.
Yeah.
And so
maybe the F word that bothers him is Fowler. That could be Victor.
I haven't heard
you say some people.
Why you say frickin', is that it?
Frick, yeah, F, and I said it, you know, but
that's a euphemism for the F word. It's not the F word.
It is. Yeah.
It's a substitute. But we don't even use it on the angry readers. I tell all the editors when they get me the letters that we're not to print what the people write to it. You should see the stuff they write.
Yeah.
It's full of obscenities, and we usually, you know, put an F and then three dots, two dots. Yeah. Or
like Sergeant Snorkel from Beetle Bailey. You have to use all the characters, stars and ampersands, et cetera.
I'm writing ultras for the website today.
Right.
And I'm going through what were the 10 strangest encounters I've had during the collapse of civilization out here? Meaning I went a half a century with maybe one a year at most of a guy comes in and strips a truck, or a guy comes in with an AR-15, shoots everything up, or person. Right. Who comes in with a chainsaw and cuts off all the brass valves off the drip system, but not now. So I was going through them, and I was writing. I was very careful not to be graphic, but the night before last, I was walking by myself at dusk, and there was this car. This is a metaphor for California. And the windows were up, but there was nobody in it, but the hatchback was up. Yeah. And so, my God, I thought, wow, this car has been stripped. Or the occupants are thieves and they're out in the orchard trying to strip the copper wire out of the submersible pump, you know, and they're coming back to their mode of transport. So as I walked by, there were people in it.
In the hatchback, in the back? Or
in the back, laying down, and they were engaged in a sexual act. But I didn't know that when I saw them.
Yeah, wow.
Because one of the persons had their legs around the other person's neck. That person was on the back, and the other person was facing them. And both of them were, one, the person on the lying flat was looking at me, but I wasn't, I could just see that person's legs around the person whose back was torn.
Yes.
To
and that person interrupt us. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't know what they were doing. So I thought for a second that they were there and this person was doing CPR, like pushing.
Oh, you know.
And the person was propped up maybe. And they were, because they were frantically moving.
Okay.
So I walked over and said, can I help you? And they turned around and they were not clothed. And so I said in Spanish, this is private property.
Yeah.
And of course.
Privates, right?
Yeah. Well, it was private. But my point is, I'm not trying to be gross, but I would. I was writing this as an incident, as one of my ten weirdest incidents.
Say in the life of Victor Davis Hanson. Yeah.
The entire semi, a whole semi with two big trailers, 80,000 pounds, parked in my orchard being stripped was one of the, I think that made number eight. But so anyway, I was described, but I was very careful not to use the words that describe the act is what I'm saying.
Right.
I always do that. I try to use euphemisms. But the weird thing about it is, and this is the reason I'm relating it, is the attitude when you find something like this on your property. It's the attitude when you see somebody with an AR-15 shooting in your direction, you hear a bullet whiz by 20 yards away, or when you go in there and you see a guy unloading 50-gallon black trash bags of garbage on your property. It's never, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's anger. So when I walked by and I said, could I help you, thinking it was CPR, I thought maybe it's mixed martial arts. I didn't know which it was. I thought, wow, they're fighting. They're fighting. And this person's flipped the person down, or she's pushing down on her heart because she's dying. Yeah. And then that was dispelled the moment they turned around and I saw they were unclothed. One got up, one turned around. But the point I'm making is, what would be the reaction? Embarrassment?
Yeah.
So I just walked. I said, okay, it's private property. And I said, I'm not going to get near these people. So I just kept walking. And I looked around at about 30 yards and they clothed themselves and got in the car and they made a U-turn. They didn't have to make it. They could have gone out the alleyway that way, but they made a U-turn and they gunned it right by me as I was like, and then rolled down the window and swore at me. And I thought, wow, this is so weird. You just broke the law. You came onto my piece of property and I didn't yell at you. I let you continue whatever you were doing. I'm still not quite sure of what type of sexual activity it was or what gender you were. But anyway, I let it go on and you repay that magnanimity as weakness to be exploited because you drive by and then you try to go really close to me really fast, but even then you roll down the window and start swearing at me.
Yeah.
And that sums up California today. It really does.
That's crazy, Victor. I don't think they're going to name the child Victor, by the way. Let's <run out. laughs>
Well, I think they were of the same gender, maybe put it that way. So they're going to have, not that they couldn't have a child in today's three-gender society.
Right.
Nevertheless. Okay, that's enough.
Turkey baster in the car. Okay, my friend. Hey, I want to recommend to our listeners, of course, VictorHansen.com, that's the Blade of Perseus. That's his website. Victor just said he's writing Ultra pieces. Well, those are the pieces he writes exclusively for the Blade of Perseus. You should subscribe. It costs $5 a month or $50 discounted for the full year. Two or three times every week, Victor writes Ultra pieces, and that you'll also find on the website links to his American Greatness weekly essay, syndicated column, other writings, archives of this podcast, links to his books, including his forthcoming book, The End of Everything. And again, it's you can also, by the way, you can also sign up for the weekly email that goes out from the Blade of Perseus. So please do that. And as for me, Jack Fowler, I write Civil Thoughts. The free weekly email newsletter comes out every Friday. It's got 14 recommended readings. Here's an excerpt. Here's a link. These are things, articles I've come across in the previous week, and I think you will like them. I do that for the Center for Civil Society at AMFIL, where we are trying to strengthen civil society. So go to civilthoughts.com and do sign up. We read all the comments. People leave comments on Victor's website, and that you can leave comments if you listen to this podcast through iTunes and Apple. And you can rate the show 0 to 5 stars, and practically everyone gives Victor 5 stars. And here is one comment, and it's very short and sweet. An American treasure. Victor is an outstanding human, wise beyond comprehension and years. He's one of a few American treasures speaking truth. We are blessed to have him among us at this time of national devolvement. And this is signed by Ron J.L., and we thank him. Victor, we mentioned earlier, Victor, about Ronna McDaniel, a very long tweet or X that he did. Well, if you're on Twitter or X, his handle is at VD Hansen. So do check that out. And if you're on Facebook, the Victor Davis Hansen Fan Club, not officially tied in here, but good people, join that. VDH's Morning Cup, you'll find that on Facebook. And by the way, one last thing. This podcast is housed at John Solomon's justthenews.com. So check that out too. Victor, you've been terrific. We thank you for all the wisdom you shared. Thanks, folks, for listening. If you're a new listener, I hope you enjoyed it. Again, Victor said 4 times a week. That's a lot. That's a lot of Victor. But for many people, it's not enough. Anyway, right, Victor?
Even more. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Thanks so much. We will be back.
Okay,
soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hansen Show.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.